The home of Cambridge music.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Good afternoon. And for the last time at 12 noon, we welcome you to Flavour, because from the 1st of September, we will still be on your radio, but we're going to be on at 1 p.m. on Saturday, and as usual, 2 p.m. on Sunday for the repeat. So we wish a final thanks to Ian Daborne for the last 2 hours of music, and it's been a pleasure following in your footsteps, Ian. And on today's Flavour with Alan Alder, Dr. Sue Bailey and myself, Matt Benman, we are going to find out about the job scene for chefs in Cambridge, and we'll meet some new food and drink businesses, two that are about to start up, one that's been going on for a little while.
Yes, there's a new bakery and a new outdoor bar and a travelling wine tasting van too.
In addition, we find out about the huge number of plum varieties available at a fruit farm in Willingham and get some ideas for cooking them.
So, a nice varied programme which demonstrates how the food and drink scene in Cambridge just carries on growing. So let's start with how easy it is to get chefs.
Yeah, restaurants and cafes are under a lot of pressure at the moment. There's a steadily increasing competition, rapidly increasing business rates, and with Brexit on the way, a diminishing labour pool. In London, for example, 25% of chefs and 75% of waiting staff are from continental Europe. So how easy are businesses finding it to get chefs? And what are they doing to encourage people to work for them? I spoke with Vladimir Hromek at a rather noisy smokeworks in Station Road. That's part of the Cam's Cuisine group. Vlad, how easy is it to get chefs in Cambridge?
It's a bit of a mission impossible at the moment, especially the good ones. It's quite difficult, you know, when you're looking for quality and quantity as well at the times. You know, we're an organic business, we grow through people. But yeah, these days you put three different arts on three different platforms, you paid for them. We pay decent wages, we try to create a good, you know, work-life balance for people, but you'd get very little, if anything.
Well, you don't get very many responses to the ads.
You might get responses, you might get 10 responses out of 10 people, you reply to all of them, maybe 5 of them will contact you back, and so you arrange 5 interviews or trial shifts, and you'd lucky if one or two of them turns up.
Right. So what do you do?
Well, what do you do? What do we do? And how we try to combat it is we're trying to be a really good employer. You know, we look after our staff. We're trying to be really good in having that work-life balance. Our chefs are not working long hours. You know, they always get 2 days off. They always get, you know, mixture of the split shifts and straight shifts. So it's not just sort of your all days. We offer good, you know, good salaries. We offer a good hourly pay. We try not to work our chefs to the bone, and appreciate, you know, what we got. We try to grow our people, so we employ based on attitude, and that's where really we can input the skills, we can input the sort of systems, we can input the knowledge. But obviously, if the attitude is missing, it's irrelevant how good you are. You know, we get no nonsense policy in Cam's Cuisine, and we just don't put up with nonsense. So yeah, it's a mixture of trying to grow from within of the people, in having a good quality training. We use at the moment Flow Hospitality on a platform, so where we provide all our training, and it's more the on-job training, which is really important. We try to be good leaders. So we try to lead by an example. We try to create a sub-leaders and lead. We try to have as many of them as possible. We live our values and behaviors. We live them, you know, daily. And we as leaders, we need to be showing to people who we employ that we really mean the business.
Yeah.
We're really passionate about what we do, and I think that makes a difference. But yeah, it's incredibly difficult market to.
And
to
is this
employ.
Are this all grades of chef?
Yeah, all across the board.
Yeah.
All across
right.
the board.
But the regional college has a catering course, doesn't it? Doesn't that supply a reasonable number?
There is a slight flaw in the system. My feeling as a foreigner, and I'm a foreigner from Slovakia, is that a catering in England is very undervalued industry. I think it's not seen as a career path. I don't think people see themselves as a longevity a job. They just see it as a stage in their life, or might be a summer job, whatever. It might be just 2-3 years. If they don't really want to commit to any other career in that time. But actually, I'd say, you know, we get some apprentices, but 80% of those kids will never end up in industry.
But those who want a career in industry, then there sounds like there's, in the catering industry, sounds like there's a lot of opportunities.
There is a lot of opportunities, but I'll put it this way. If you're 18 years old and all your mates are working 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, have every evening off pretty much and every weekend off, and you suddenly start working in a catering where, you know, your Thursday night, Friday day, Friday night, Saturday day, Saturday night, Sunday lunch is your busiest part of the day, you're essentially an outlaw. You're not going to see them. So I think that's where really the lifestyle choice becomes easy for people coming out, and they rather stick to sort of your 9 to 5 jobs Monday to Friday, or maybe, you know, just a weekday job rather than a weekend job.
The issue of unsocial working hours and the sheer number of working hours is a major problem. Cambridge chef Alex Rushmer has said how he was working around 90 hours a week when he ran the hole in the wall. The economics of restaurants is a problem too. We know that a lot of restaurants nationally have closed for financial reasons this year, including Cow in Cambridge. Here is Alex Rushmer.
We'll have to see some compromises somewhere, whether that's in working hours or if people are actually willing to pay a little bit more for the food on their plate. I think the message that we have to get across is actually when you see those menu prices, they reflect much more than the cost of the ingredients on the plate, and all those costs have to be met.
Costs like
staff, rent, heating, lighting, the gas that is required to cook the piece of meat, the person that needs to wash the pan, the person that needs to polish your wine glass, the person that needs to pour the wine for you. I mean, if you see a P&L for a restaurant, it's just lines and lines and lines of costs, and usually just one line of income, and it's very difficult sometimes to make those two balance.
Samira Effer of Alimentum closes for 2 days a week, and that reduces the need for very expensive agency staff and holds her team together. Daniel Clifford from Midsummer House has teamed up with some other restaurants to train staff up. So it's a tricky problem.
Yes, and as usual, at the end of the programme, we'll have details of some jobs currently available. That's at the beginning of our news section.
OK, now, on a very windy day, I went down to the Museum of Technology. That's by Riverside. It contains a house, a museum and the grounds, of course. And if you're walking along the Cam, you're heading towards Fendittin, you'd probably recognise it from the big chimney that juts into the air. Well, it's under reconstruction at the moment, but something new is about to appear there of a mildly foodie nature.
We called Other Side, spelt with a Y. One of the themes here is that this is part of an old boating station. Yeah. So it's on the other side of the river. My name is Matthew Taylor. I'm currently managing the project at the Engineer's House. I've formerly worked at Lockhouse Escape Games on Regent Street. Before that, I was involved in the charity sector, theatre. So a lot of what I'm doing on this project brings together various things that I've worked on in the past.
Four major changes are going on here.
Yes, that's right. First project is renovate the house. Well, the house was built in 1896, a couple of years after the museum. Well, it wasn't a museum then, it was a pumping station for Cambridge. There was quite a large fire here 10 years ago. You could stand on the ground floor and you could look up and you could see the roof. Some chap unfortunately set fire to himself while smoking in his bed. Mm. From that time till a few weeks ago, there'd been no work done on the house at all. So when we moved in, it was a complete state.
It almost looks like you've got a concert overlooking the river here. You've got first seating and...
Yes, well, I was inspired by the back of King's Cross Station. There's steps leading down to, I think it's Regent Canal or Regent's Canal.
Hmm.
And so it occurred to me that maybe we could do a similar little version of it here in Cambridge. So, yeah, the idea is that you'll just be able to sit on these big steps we've put a bit of AstroTurf on, and you'll be able to sit here, drink a beer and watch the world go by.
The last time I was here was when the Thirsty Riverside Beer Garden was set up on this.
Yes, I came back then as well.
Yeah.
Yes. No, that was very successful.
Oh, look at that noise!
It's a mini festival. Yeah.
They're all reacting to the sun. The sun has just finally poked through those clouds.
The South African food van arrives and the sun comes
and
out.
And the South African food. This lady's from South Africa.
But the museum's objective has always been to turn this into a place that is not just a bar. What I've been briefed to do is to set things up so that people will come here, maybe just for a drink. The museum is undergoing a huge renovation funded by the Heritage Lottery Fund. We should be opening formally within a week or two. What we'll be doing, as I said, is raising awareness of the museum. We'll be hosting talks. Mm. There'll be ghost tours. We're going to be building 3 escape rooms in the house, and they'll all be themed around technology and the future of technology.
Okay.
So, yeah, everything we're doing is designed to bring awareness of the museum.
And, of course, what we're interested in is the food aspect, the social aspect as well.
Yes.
What we're introducing to, I guess, a relatively quiet side of town.
Yes, well, I live on the other side of town, which is probably just as quiet. It's beautiful. It's a lovely spot.
Yes, it is.
We're overlooking the river, just bicycles, pedestrians and boats.
Oh. Give it 10 hard strokes to finish off with. 10 pounds.
So from the front garden, you can look out and you can see, I think it's a nature reserve. So it's a very quiet spot. It's a part of town that very few people know about, and that's why it's good that there's something happening here. So I think we have to congratulate the museum for getting things going at the engineer's house.
Now, looking in the other direction, there's construction of a bar.
Yeah, it's a pop-up bar, and it's been made mostly, I'd say 80% of it, is made from materials that have been reclaimed from the museum. So we've got some old scaffolding here, odd-shaped bits of metal. So what we've done is we've tried to incorporate as much of the materials that we found on site into the pop-up structures that we've created here.
Yeah, I like the fact that you've got the solid bar alongside some quite old antique-looking bookshelves with glass doors on.
Yes, that's a Victorian gin bar.
Okay.
That was donated by Cambridge Wine Merchants. So we will be turning that into a gin bar at some point. But at the moment, it's just an interesting thing to put at the back of our pop-up bar.
Yeah.
Apparently, gin is an in thing. But again, I've learned all this in the last week or so. But yeah, there'll be a wide range of drinks. To begin with, we're going to be doing bottled beers, wines. The Grape Van, do you know the Grape Van? They do wine tastings. So we talked to them about coming down here and offering wine tastings to customers.
Wine tastings on site, you mean?
Yes, the idea is that they turn up with their van to offer people wine tastings, and then they come up to the bar and they can have a glass full.
So they'll be in full attract mode down the front, as it were?
Yes.
What days will you be open? Is it every weekend?
To begin with, because I don't know what the foot traffic is going to be like, we're going to open it Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The bar will be open to the public from lunchtime through till 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And we'll be serving food here as well, so we'll have various street food vendors coming down.
Excellent. You just piqued my interest there when you mentioned the Cambridge Wine Merchants. So do they have any involvement in this, or are you just friends with them?
I've become friends with them. They're a very friendly bunch.
They are,
and they've been very incredibly helpful. And they've provided us with tables and chairs. Most of our drink is being supplied through them, and they're providing us with lots of advice on what to offer customers. Because I've got no experience of running a bar at all, so I don't know.
Oh, brand new to it. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, when I put the proposal for this project together, the bar wasn't even in my mind. But obviously, over the last couple of months, it's obvious that the bar is something that a lot of people are more interested in than anything else that we're working on. So, yeah, we're trying to get the bar up and running as soon as possible. I'm looking forward very much to it opening formally in a couple of weeks' time.
Just looking to our right, this is where the Enchanted Cinema will be.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, what we've done, and this was probably one of the first big things that we undertook, was we levelled the back garden. The back garden was a tip, so we thought, wouldn't it be fantastic to make it into a really nice beer garden? Hopefully, the lawn will be ready pretty soon, and then we'll be able to open up the back garden, and people will be able to come and have a drink in it, maybe have a game of croquet. We're going to be running yoga lessons here. So again, the plan is to make the space as accessible to other interested parties as possible. We've got space for an art gallery, cinema, a license for theatre.
So much going on.
The formal launch will be organised in partnership with the Enchanted Cinema. I'm very glad that I've met people at Cambridge Wine Merchants and Enchanted Cinema, because without them I'd be pretty clueless, I have to admit.
You know, a good few hundred people can be on this site.
Yes, they can. Once the back garden is opened, we're standing at the bar at the moment, which is raised up quite high.
Well, we're kind of propped up at the bar, really, I guess.
We are.
This is how it will be.
Yeah. So if you're standing at the bar and you're looking down towards the river, then you're going to be looking across our front garden, and there's going to be tables and seats there, a food stall pretty much every night, we hope, different food vendors on different nights. The nice thing about it is standing here is that when you look down to the river, because the street is a dead end, the only people going past are either on foot, bicycles, or in boats. So it's very quiet. There's lots of wildlife here, which is really nice.
Yeah, that was Matthew Taylor talking about his bar, Other Side. And if you'd like to catch up with the latest from that venue, and it is going to get busy with all manner of events and vendors, you can follow them on Twitter. Now, their handle is @theotherside, and side is spelt with a Y.
And on a similar theme, a bar, but this time on wheels. Hi, I'm Dr. Sue Bailey, and I am with Leonardo Robarts and Sebastian Squire. They are both directors of a very innovative new concept, and it's called Through the Grape Van. So, guys, tell me a little bit more. What is Through the Grape Van?
So, we've essentially started up a mobile wine bar. So we purchased a 1970 Renault Estafette. We've taken the time over the course of the year to really do it up, to turn it into a classy, really nice-looking wine bar that we take around and we go to festivals. We've been doing private events. We've been doing tastings. And just making wine a little bit more accessible. We're able to do normal bar service, but really specialising in our love of wine. Yeah.
And why Through the Grape Van? That's an interesting name.
We made the sort of communications with each other about wanting to do a wine bar on wheels, and it was such a niche, we thought we would need a quirky name. And I said to Seb one day, well, what's it called then? And he said, Wine on Wheels. And I was like, nah. Then he said, Heard It Through the Grape Van. And I just went, stop. Not only being involved in music and having this really nice tongue-in-cheek element to it, it's just a sort of friendly, fun name, really. And we immediately were like, that's it.
It's lovely. I love the idea of the Grape Van, you know, this little touring wine bar coming around. It's fantastic. But why the interest in wine?
I actually kind of fell into wine. I was studying for my master's and got a job at the Cambridge Wine Merchants. And 4 years later, the master's is done, but I haven't really followed through with what was going on, and started learning more and more about wine and really getting interested in it. And then recently taken on the role of doing the tastings for the company, and kind of that was it. I kind of fell into the love of wine. It's easy to do, though, isn't it?
Oh, very easy.
He's got the qualifications as well. But for me, it was more of my dad was very involved in wine. He used to go and, you know, bring lots back from France with friends that were very into it as a hobby. So I grew up with this kind of wine thing running through my family. And when I got married, my wife studied Italian wine in Rome for a year.
Nice.
And so what we would do for our fun would basically be everywhere we went, the first priority would be to go and hit a vineyard up, meet the producer, try all the local wines, learn about the grape varieties, and just come back just feeling really enthusiastic about, you know, wine and how it's made and why it tastes so good.
Yes, exactly. Oh, brilliant. The wines you get are, you supply them, you source them yourselves, or what's the link?
Yeah, so having worked through the Cambridge Wine Merchants, they were very nice to supply us with the wine. So we've been immersed in this huge selection of wine. So we have quite a nice opportunity then to alter our wine list depending on what event that we're doing. And if people want a private tasting, we can have a chat with them. And then we have this huge selection that we can choose from, which has been really, really nice. We don't have to stick to a kind of single model. And that's what's been really nice. And we've just gone around, we did an Italian-themed one at a Farm Barriere show, which was really quite exciting that people got involved in.
Very exciting. We managed to, because it's been so hot, it's obviously affected what people drink. So, like, what was nice about going to Farm Barriere show, where it was an absolutely amazing event, was thinking it's going to be blazing hot, and we're not going to sell much red wine, and people don't want to drink that. So rather than doing the tastings, we actually, because we were an Italian bar, we then brought four infused gins that we really liked that the company did, and they did really well. So it wasn't us, you know, saying we're not a wine bar, because that is our sort of spearhead, is the fact that we are guys that love wine and love giving wine to people in places where they probably haven't had that quality wine for a cheap price. But the event itself was so nice to just have something different. So we're actually acting as a bar as well as just a wine bar, basically. Mm. What else? Pimm's. We've been on the Pimm's O'Clock.
Ah, have you? Nice. Yay. Yeah.
Seb got a kilner and it fit perfectly in our little space in the van. So now we've got this big glass sort of tanker that we fill up at the beginning of the day and empty halfway through it, usually.
Excellent. What about those non-alcoholic drinks? Are you bothering to stock any of those at the moment?
We do. You can't. I mean, especially this summer with how hot it's been, you need to make sure you've got a lot of water on board, a lot of non-alcoholic drinks. I mean, if you do private parties, there's going to be children there.
It's nice to do nice ones as well, though, isn't it? Like dandelion and burdock and stuff that people get a little bit excited
about. Lovely, traditional ones. Yeah. Interesting.
You know, the word bespoke gets used a lot at the moment, but we're very much like, from the ground up, we're all about quality. The whole thing for us is, the priority is just to have nice stuff.
In terms of where you're going to go for the future, is this going to go travelling?
Well, we did a festival in Bulgaria. The van didn't come, unfortunately, but we went out to Bulgaria and went to a really nice festival, and we were doing wine tastings up a mountainside.
That was for us the highlight of actually wine selecting.
Yeah.
Because we put so much time into the indigenous grape varieties. We didn't want to just go and do Cab Franc and Merlot up in Bulgaria, where actually their indigenous grape varieties are incredible, but we would have never found out about them if we hadn't done this amazing recce and just learned. We went to all these different producers and vineyards and everything. And by the end of it, we were like, Bulgarian wine is amazing. And hopefully in the future, we'll be able to start importing wine, because obviously, like Seb said, we use the Cambridge Wine Merchants. They've got an amazing warehouse of wine, and it makes our job easy because we get to drink them, test them, and then say, that's going to do really well, you know.
So if somebody was to come along to one of your wine tastings, how does it work? Tell me a bit more.
We have a different, like, variety of ways to do wine tastings. You can privately hire us and just say, you know, we're interested in a wine tasting for a certain amount, you know, friends and family and maybe a dinner party or anything in that kind of method. And what you do is just sign up, talk to us on the website, get a bit of interest going, and we can build a wine tasting that works for you. We also do organised wine tastings where we will choose essentially what wine tasting we're going to do, and you can sign up to it. We actually have one coming up on the 6th of September at Foy, which is the new cafe on Quayside. So we know the owners there, Sophie and Matt, really well, and just decided to work together. So it's going to be a Spanish wine and food pairing, which we're really looking forward to. And so you can either do it on your own or you can join one of our organised ones.
And Dario as well. We have a chef that we bring in, and we do, like, well, actually a lot of the time we've used him. He's a good friend. He's got a company called Grazie Cambridge, and he's an Italian guy who imports the most beautiful Italian cheeses and meats. And we, on our sort of soft launch, when we actually said to all of our friends and family, here's our van, here's our business, we got him there and we did a whole tasting with him. So it's really nice to offer that for people, because if they said, well, look, I want a wine tasting, we can say, we can bring a chef and we can actually pair the food with the wine, which is exciting. Because, you know, picking the list makes it more fun to bounce it off with the food, isn't it?
Sounds really, really fun. So it sounds like great things are ahead for you guys.
I hope so. Keep
the
hands going.
Have you heard it on the grape van? I love it.
Yeah.
So if people want to find out a bit more about you, how do they do that?
Our website is going, which is www.thegrapevan.co.uk. If you search The Grape Van on Instagram, we'll come up. If you search us on Eventbrite, just through The Grape Van, you can get tickets for the tasting we've got coming up at Foy. Yeah, there's a little section in the website just to contact us directly. You can do that at info@thegrapevan.co.uk as well.
Sounds absolutely perfect. Wow, I'm looking forward to coming and sampling from The Grape Van.
For free, obviously.
friends.
Makes sense.
Why not? Thank you so much. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.
And that was Sue talking with Sebastian Squire and Leonardo Roberts of Heard It Through the Grape Van.
A great name to go with a great idea.
Yeah, it is. And showing also how much the local scene benefits from Cambridge wine merchants as well, I think.
And that music signals time for the latest food tweets from the city.
Yeah, Matthew Taylor from The Other Side Bar, we heard about earlier, has tweeted to say his soft opening continues from 6 o'clock today. That's by the Museum of Technology. Steak and Honour are on the meadows at Trumpington this afternoon. Bacchanalia, which has draft beer that you can take away in containers. Oakham Ale's White Dwarf is on offer today. And also the Wheel Chi Brewery from Haarlem in Holland's El Patron. Cambridge Distillery has tweeted to say that they'll be at the Cambridge Cocktail Weekend at the Corn Exchange, that's next weekend, with cocktails from £5, free masterclasses and workshops. One of the things I really enjoy is the different foods the different seasons bring us. And at the moment, we're well into the plum season. And I often just eat them. While I'm doing so, I think they'd be even more enjoyable if I made something from them. I wondered how many people do that and asked Chris on Cambridge Market, who was in somewhat feisty mood, what his customers did.
Chris, how many people actually make something with plums rather than eating them raw?
I would say probably 60% to 70% just eat raw, and the rest usually either jam them, bottle them, make them into a compote to have with muesli or something like that. It's usually the older generation that cook, somebody like yourself.
I asked Wendy of Bushel Box Farm in Willingham the same question and how they use them for their coffee shop, which is open at weekends.
The vast majority come in and will tell me they're going to go home and eat them like a bag of sweeties and be back for them in a few days' time. We also get people come in that want to make some jam. A few people come in wanting plums to put in the freezer for the winter months. So sometimes how easy they are to stone can be an important point with them. So we're quite seasonal with the baking that we do for the weekend coffee shop. So this time of year, we'd quite often be doing something with plums, whether it's upside down plum cake like we did last week, or a plum cinnamon bake I think we did a couple of weeks ago. I think the upside down cake is something that you could do plums. I think we've done it with pears. You could put apple in it, cherries. It's one of those recipes, you choose the fruit.
And what's happening to plum as a sort of popular fruit? Is it, do you think it's gaining popularity, or is it on a level, or?
Looking at the amount of excitement that is generated when we put on our social media that plums are in, we put the signs out at the gate saying plums, people come rushing in, they're excited. A plum season is here, and it's really nice that people make a real effort to come in to what have you got this time, because regular customers will know that, especially this time of year, they'll come in. They come in next week and most of what they tried is gone, but there's something else to try.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the excitement.
Yeah, oh, that's fantastic. I love it.
So I'm hoping that young children as well seem, you know, oh, can we have some plums? And that's really nice.
Well, they're very easy to eat, aren't they?
They're easy to eat. They don't need peeling. They're nice and soft. And there's lots of different flavours to try. And the colours as well. I think they probably appeal to young children from that respect as well. Mm. I think they're difficult to get hold of if you can only get to the supermarket. I think it's difficult to get hold of English plums apart from Victoria's. Maybe Opal. Opal you do see in the supermarket. And as you said, the Marjorie seedling. Mm. If you are lucky enough to have somewhere that does grow plums, then this time of year you really ought to be visiting.
Mm. And of course, whatever dish you cook, you need the best ingredients. So I asked Wendy about the different varieties of plum they grow at Bushel Box Farm. They have 35 types. And Wendy took me through what was in stock when I visited on Wednesday.
This is Monsieur Hatif. By its name, it is grown here. It's very much grown here in Willingham. If you were to pick this up, it's got the most amazing exotic fragrance to it. It's so exotic, it doesn't actually smell like it should be grown here.
I've never heard of it.
No, a lot of people haven't. That is actually a black gauge, in some way related to the green gauge.
And what's the taste like?
Are really sweet, really good. We can try one a bit later if you'd like.
I'd love to.
Moving on, we've got Czars. These are a real traditional old favourite. So they make a really lovely red jam. They've got a good depth of flavour. And yeah, certainly some people that come in, they really seek them out.
So you get customers who actually go for specific varieties?
Oh, definitely. We get a lot of phone calls. Do you have such and such in? Is it too early? Have I missed it? We have people that will have a standing order every year for their favourite variety.
Is there an overall favourite, would you say?
Obviously, the Victoria plum is the most well-known and probably the most requested, and certainly the most commercially available. It's the one you're going to see in the supermarkets. And it's a really, really good English plum. It's got a really good flavour.
Are they your favourite?
They are not my favourites. I actually prefer something that's just a little bit... sharp is the wrong word, but maybe something with a little bit more depth of flavour. So at the start of the season, I'll go for the Early Rivers, which is a really traditional old favourite and one that I think you know.
Yes, it's one that I like a lot. Yes. It's one of my favourites.
That's something we also have a lot of orders and requests for. So again, it's one of the varieties that people want every year. Moving on, we've got a plum called Utility. It's a really lovely plum. It's quite a good size. It's got this nice sort of reddy purpley skin. And it's a really good sweet eater. Next on the table is Sanctus Hubertus. This was actually raised in Belgium. This is another one of my personal favourites. It is loosely related to the Early Rivers. These are really lovely to cook with. They're actually, tried one earlier, they're quite freestoning. If you were to basically get hold of one and basically split it open, this is one of the tests we do all the time with people. You can just pick the stone out.
Oh,
there's no stone cling.
Yeah.
So basically that's very useful if you're going to be stoning plums for the freezer, or if you just want to put a few in a pie. You don't have to stand there with a knife and try and poke the stone out. And round the other side of the table, we've got these opal plums. Really sweet, really easy eating.
They're a very nice colour, aren't they?
They are. They're quite a pleasing colour.
Sort of deep red to orange,
yeah,
to almost yellow.
And then this one, which is the same plum, is almost sort of purpley black. So they're quite variable in colour.
Yeah.
Then we've got the Violetta. You can see these are quite variable in size, but very, very dark, very dark skinned and very oblong compared with some of the other plums.
And quite large.
Yes. Yeah, they do tend to come quite large. This is Swan. So this is quite a round plum. It is a plum. Quite sort of red, maybe a hint of purple. Yellow-fleshed, sweet eater.
Yes, they look like they've been polished.
They do, don't they? Yeah, they've always got that look about them. And then at the front here, we've got the Golden Gauge that I was saying we just literally picked in the last hour or so. And they've got this, again, this amazing smell to them. Really difficult to pick because they bruise so easily. The colour of them just means that they show all the finger marks and things. So you literally have to try and pick them by twisting the stalks and not touching the plum.
You wouldn't find these generally in a supermarket
they're
then?
They're not very common.
Because they're damaged?
They would, by the time they'd been through the distribution chain, they would just look dreadful.
Yeah, so they're quite thin-skinned, are they? Is that what
they
it
are
is?
They are very thin-skinned, but also the yellow plums are always going to show the finger marks more.
And good flavour?
They've got an excellent flavour. They're really sweet.
Smell.
It smells
absolutely
amazing, isn't
wonderful.
It? Yeah. And they're still slightly warm from coming out of the orchard as well, which obviously helps with the fragrance. Yeah.
And there's another really simple idea for plums. Here's Wendy again. Right, tell me about stuffed plums.
Stuffed plums. If you were to take a reasonably sized plum and split it in half and obviously take the stone out, put them so that they're split side up in an oven dish. You can crumble something like an amaretti biscuit onto them and obviously bake them in the oven. And then maybe you could put a splash of wine or something else if you wanted to in, just so they didn't completely dry out. And then probably serve them with, I don't know, cream, ice cream, whatever you fancy, really.
Finally, I asked Wendy what varieties are still to come.
Still to come, we've got Reeves. It looks a bit like a peach. It's the shape of a peach. It's very sweet, very, very popular. Oh, we've still got the Victorias, as we mentioned. Green Gauge is yet to come, really popular crop. We've got a St Andrew's Gauge yet to come, which is quite a dark plum, quite a dark gauge. Excalibur still to come, if we have any. These tend to split, so some of the plums have a real tendency to split at the bottom.
What, if it's rained?
Or just because they feel like it sometimes. Some of these that come, if I say sort of peak season, things like the Excalibur, and also this plum here, Yakima, they are really, really attractive to wasps as well. So you will tend to find a lot of insect damage in them as well. What else have we got to come? Jubileum, but this is related to Victoria. It comes really big. Yellow egg is very much a processing plum. It's diamond in shape. It actually makes a really good jam. We've still got Edwards to come. This is a really big, almost egg-shaped plum. Queen's Crown. Burbank giant prune. These are really highly prized for stewing. I think it's partly habit and tradition, but there's customers that will come in, have you got any Burbank giant prune for stewing? Burbank tangerine, this apparently was a great favourite of the late Queen Mother. Really quite striking to look at. Seneca, another really lovely sweet eating plum. President dark skinned, multi-purpose, makes quite nice jam. Verity is a very new plum. We've not had that very many years. It's a relatively new development, but they eat beautifully. Marjorie seedling. This is the sort of the follow-on from Victoria. So this is the other big plum in the season.
Yes, I've seen them. I always think of them as being they're the last one that I see
pretty
on
much,
sale.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Just mentioned the Wydale here. That is very much a cooking plum. It's really quite sour. It does make a nice jam because obviously it's so sour. You don't end up with a jam that's really sweet because you've added the sugar. The last one to mention is Higanta. This is another really new development. It's a dark-skinned plum. We're really pleased with this. Again, we've only had this about 4 or 5 years. That's lovely, really lovely.
So there are still new varieties of plum being developed?
Oh, definitely,
then.
Yes. Yeah, there's still trials going on. The holy grail of plum growing would be to find something that looks like a Victoria, that eats like a Victoria, that comes at the beginning of October. For people trying to extend the plum season, which is really short, so we say basically middle of July to, if we're lucky, we can just about get into October, maybe the first week in October. And for a lot of people, the plum season happens before they really realise it's happening or even happened. People this time of year, they're away on their holidays, they're very busy in their own gardens maybe. And then come the end of September, they'll decide, oh, plums, and we're nearly done.
So people think of plums really as being an autumnal fruit, whereas really they're a high summer fruit.
Yes, yeah. And there are a lot of recipes around that are more autumnal in nature, you know, stewed plums, plum crumbles, plum cakes. They're all things that we start to think of when the nights draw in and it's just a little bit cooler. And, you know, a few weeks ago, who'd have wanted to talk about stewed plums? It was just too hot to be wanting to cook at all.
Thanks to Wendy Jones from Bushel Box Farm in Station Road, Willingham. Their farm shop has a really good supply of different varieties and they sell lots of other produce too. It's open from 10 till 6 every day except Monday. The coffee shop is open at weekends with Wendy's cakes and other treats. And on Saturdays there's fresh bread from Over Real Bread and they serve Hot Numbers coffee too. Well worth a trip out and there's plenty of parking space as well.
Sounds absolutely fantastic. And, oh, wow, I go collecting plums when I can, but they're not, they're damsons and mirabelles. But yeah. Some of her ideas, fantastic. I must know. Go there.
And they also sell, I should say, they also grow a lot of apple varieties. They grow apricots and they even grow peaches.
A quick word about free food available now in Cambridge, which you can find on the Olio app. And a little admission, I only found one thing, which was bulgur wheat, but that's already gone because last night. But then we can add to that, can't we, Alan?
Yeah, Olio is a great app for finding free food, but also for getting rid of your own excess food. For example, if you're going to go on holiday for a fortnight and you've got 6 eggs in your fridge and they won't be good when you come back, you can get rid of them to somebody else on the Olio app. So worth doing.
Sounds great. It's the holiday season, and did you know that it's possible to have working holidays on organic farms with free accommodation and food? It's called Woofing, Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. Alan spoke with woofer Dee Fisher about it.
So it's a way of offering volunteer labour on organic farms in exchange for your accommodation and meals.
Right, well, you're woofing at the moment on an allotment. Have you woofed elsewhere?
Oh, I have. My daughter and I travelled around the UK and Europe for 4 months last year, and it was a great way to be able to do it. We spent about 2 months in Cambridge last year. We woofed on a fantastic organic farm up near Peterborough for a little while, which was very different. It was an organic salad production. So very, very different operation. We learned really quite different things there. But I think the best place we stayed was actually on the mainland just outside Venice. Stayed in a little gypsy caravan on an organic farm there. And there they have a constant rotation of woofers who work there all the time. Wonderful, wonderful place.
Wow, it does sound good. Can you stay as long as you like, or is there
a
limit?
Do you know, each individual owner or farm has their option about what they want. And so some places would prefer only to have casual weekend workers come in, so they tend to take people from the local area. Others really varied. A lot of the time you just negotiate with the owner on what you're looking for and what they're looking for, what dates are available.
Right. And you get accommodation for nothing, do you?
Yes.
Now, in return for your labour.
Yes.
And so food as well.
The accommodation is not always as grand as I have in Cambridge.
Oh.
You know, sometimes it's a tent. But they are required to provide accommodation that's reasonable, and they feed you.
Yeah.
You usually do the usual requirement with woofing is that you work 6 hours a day for 5 days a week, and then your weekends are your own or whatever.
Do growing techniques differ?
They do. Also management techniques. You know, working for the farm up in Peterborough, it was a much more regimented organization. We were up at six every day and had to work very, very hard to earn our breakfast. And it was just extremely structured. And working for an individual as we are now, it's much more relaxed. We can, you know, he's quite forgiving if we have to go to an appointment or whatever. We can kind of come and go and we make it up later. So those things do come into it. But I think the greatest thing about woofing has been the opportunity to learn. I was a very experienced gardener when I started this. I'd had my own quarter acre plot for 20 years when I lived in the UK before. But I had never grown much in the way of vegetables. And so it's been an enormous opportunity to learn so much about just the cultivation methods that are needed and the pests and diseases that are different from things that I've dealt with before. So it's been an incredible learning opportunity.
And is it quite serious? I mean, you know, one of the things that sort of historically British students have done is gone grape picking in France and sort of, I think, drunk a lot of wine and had a great time, you know. And there's been a lot of bonhomie and, you know, it's been very communal and friendly. Is there any of that, or is it...
Oh, good
is it
heavens. There is everything. When we came to Cambridge last year, we just came straight into a ready-made community. There's a huge and very warm and welcoming community that are looking at living life sustainably in this area, and we tapped straight into that community. They took us to their hearts. We were at every party and drinking all the beer, and you know, we were like part of the family. And when we've come back this year, we've been welcomed with open arms. People couldn't wait to see us again, and it's really just been lovely to come back into that community.
Oh, that's really nice.
You know, we've made lifelong friends.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. What sort of age range do woofers sort of span?
Well, you have to be, to sign up as an individual, you have to be at least 18. And as long as, I guess, you're physically able, I don't think there's any upper limit. If you're traveling with a parent or guardian, you can woof at a younger age. So my daughter was 16 when we were traveling last year, but she had to sign up through my membership. And so there are some places that won't accept children. I know people who woof as families, so they take their much younger children and they'll stay on a fruit farm or whatever, and it becomes like a combined family vacation and everybody works.
So you could spend a summer holiday doing that?
Absolutely. You could spend your whole life doing this. I'm kind of tempted.
And so where have you woofed outside of Europe? In you say in North America?
I haven't woofed in North America, right. But I know a lot of people who have. One of my friends, we lived in the Canadian Rockies, which is renowned for having no topsoil whatsoever. And so she went off way the other side of Canada to the real grain farming area. And she was running combine harvesters and all that sort of thing. And it was a very, very different experience. And working a lot with animals, which is nice for people that appeals to. She has a great love of horses. And so that was a really good opportunity for her to work with livestock.
Right. Yeah. So it's really varied.
Extremely varied.
And you can morph, you say anywhere, so you go and morph in, I don't know, Singapore or Thailand or...
As long as they have agriculture going on, yes. You know, I know people who've woofed in Greece and Italy, Estonia. You choose where you want to go and then you start to look.
Right, but do you need to know much?
Do you know? You really don't. It's an asset if you do. And some places, some advertisers will be very specific about the skill sets that they're looking for. It doesn't mean that they won't take you if you don't have those skill sets. But for a particular summer, for example, they might have a task that needs to be done. They might want to build an outbuilding. So they're looking to have woofers at some point in that time who have the skills that would help them to do that. So it doesn't mean they won't take anyone else, but they'll be very specific about what they're looking for. Others will take anybody. And you know, you do what you can. You learn a great deal. And you work together, so.
Yeah, so it sounds good. So you, to find out about it, you look at the WWOOF website.
Yes, .org.uk, I think it is.
Right.
But there's a site for every country. Google WWOOF, then you'll get the site that will tell you all of the different countries' websites. You have to go to each country's website to register or to apply for placements in
those
countries.
But there's a link on that main one.
Yeah. And I think the best thing I could possibly say is don't hesitate, because I know people who've woofed in Italy, they did not share a word of language with the people they were working with and had the best experience of their lives. It was absolutely tremendous. They were within a walk of the sea and they worked hard, they ate fantastically, had a wonderful holiday tucked in between, and again, made lifelong friends. By the end of it, they, you know, they were communicating beautifully, and they've been back two or three times since then.
Oh, wonderful.
It is. It is wonderful. Right. I don't have a bad thing to say about it.
Right. Thanks very much, Dee.
It's my pleasure.
So that was Dee Fisher on woofing. It's something I've always been quite tempted to do. Perhaps I'll go and do it.
I would.
Now, cycling along Hills Road the other week, I spotted a new shop in the works. This one is called the Cambridge Oven. So a quick phone call. I met up with the owner, Yolita, and she is here to tell us what we can expect.
I started baking when I was at school. I used to take cakes to any school events. I used to bake with my friends, and I used to bake with my family as well, my nan and my mum. My nan was a trained chef, so she used to bake a lot as well. And when I came to England, I discovered lots of different spices and flavours, and I started cooking and baking even more here.
Where did you come from?
I came from Lithuania and grew up in a big farm. So we always used to have fresh produce and fresh bread as well, especially rye bread.
So we fast forward to August 2018, and I've leapt into your shop. I think this is the earliest I've met someone at the beginning of their business. All the work is about to start. Yes, it's the Cambridge Oven is the name of their business.
Yes, it is. We will be baking some of the French-style bakery goods, brioche, croissants, lots of sourdough. I grew up eating loads of rye bread, so we will be baking quite a lot of that. Also, a range of baked goods that are quite specialist for people who, for example, intolerant to certain foods, eggs or milk, gluten-free sourdough, gluten-free cakes and pastries.
Is this your first business venture in the UK?
This is my first business venture ever. So I was a nurse for 15 years, and then I decided to do something I'm really passionate about. And that was about 3-4 years ago. I started thinking I must open a cafe or a bakery or something like that.
We're now sitting in the garden at the back. Everything is completely gutted right now. I think for the listeners' benefit, is it okay if we have a walk through?
Yeah.
So here we are. The front of the shop is split into two sections, and we're in the back section. All the walls are tiled.
This was like a food prep room, I expect.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a proper, big, lovely bread oven, which I think I'll be very proud of.
As we look out the front window, we're looking directly over to the Emperor pub, so you know exactly where we are on Hills Road, quite close to the crossroads between Hills Road and Lensfield Road, I think. And then the front, will this be for customers and for display?
We're going to have a couple of tables and a few benches for people to sit down and have a coffee and tea or whatever with our lovely cakes and things.
Yeah. So you said that you've been cooking all of your life.
I did a few courses, School of Artisan Food, and I would highly recommend them, whoever wants to learn how to bake. That's what artisan baking is. You try new recipes, you try to improve them, and you have to be patient. We will be baking a range of sourdough breads. Not any sourdough breads. We will be incorporating ancient grains like buckwheat, kamut, and spelt, which gives our breads really different texture and flavor. Also, the speciality cakes. Some of them will be baked with sourdough. Some of them will be gluten-free, for example, gluten-free chocolate cake, which is also vegan. Mm-hmm. And I recently put cherries in it, which was seasonal as well, so we will try and do that. More traditional ones as well. We're going to do orange and lemon brioche, for example. Mm-hmm. So just do something different every time for customers to try, see what they like. One thing that it's quite popular and fashionable, which Cambridge people don't really have here, I don't think, is cruffins.
Say the word again, sir.
Cruffin. It's a cake between muffin and croissant, and it's very, very tasty. So we're going to be offering that as well to try. You can have a look on our Facebook. Yeah. There are cruffins there.
Are you happy to leave nursing behind?
I am quite happy to leave nursing behind, to be honest, because I just look into the future and I know that I will really enjoy baking. And I like feeding people. It's in Lithuanian culture, I'm afraid.
And it will be cool to see it when it's all open up in September.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, thanks very much for meeting with me, Jolita.
No, pleasure.
We wish you all the best and looking forward to see how the Cambridge Oven is going to turn out here on 44 Hills Road.
Thank you very much.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
There we are, fresh out of the Cambridge Oven, or at least it shall be in a few weeks' time. And I had to check out cruffins. They've only been around a few years, and they are, as she said, muffin-shaped croissants with dozens of variations. Nutella cruffins, strawberry and cream, peanut butter, or lemon meringue muffins, it goes on. And with that in mind, there is sure to be some pleasant baking smells wafting along Hills Road in the near future. And there's Green Onion signalling the start of our news section, and we begin as usual with jobs.
The Petersfield in Sturton Street and the Waterman in Chesterton Road are both looking for a chef de partie, payers up to £9 per hour. You can apply for these positions on the City Pub Group's website.
Bill's in Green Street needs chefs, and they are having open days on Wednesdays between 10 and 6, so you can just go along with your CV for an interview. Pay is up to £10 an hour.
And if you apply for any of these jobs, good luck. And please mention that you heard about them here on Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Every Sunday evening in August, the Three Horseshoes in Madingley has a barbecue. It's from 4 till 8pm and families are welcome.
Bread making classes are beginning at Newnham Cafe Bakery, the first Sunday of the month beginning on the 2nd of September. You'll be learning to bake sourdough as well as Italian and Scandinavian breads. They run from 9.30 to 4.30 with professional artisan baker Mahala LeMay. For more details and to book, go to Know Your Loaf on Eventbrite. And if you have any queries, email doughcupclasses@gmail.com.
And also on the 2nd of September, Jenna and Craig, who have run the Free Press Pub in Prospect Row so well for 18 years, are leaving. They've been great supporters of local food too, selling Cam Cattle's beef, for example, and giving some of our food trucks a leg up. So they invite you, between now and the 2nd of September, to go along to the pub and say goodbye.
And some events coming up at Cambridge Wine Merchants branch in Cherry Hinton Road. On the 2nd of September at 12:30, Carico Tapas, they're doing their monthly Sunday tapa. A different menu each month, and you can get recipe cards to take away with you. And you can book tickets on Cambridge 214 552.
Also at Cambridge Wine Merchants, on the 4th of September, it's the monthly gin club. Five new gins to try. That's at 7pm and costs £15. Again, you can book by calling Cambridge 214 552.
And finally, on the 5th of September, there is a wine tour of Spain. It starts at 7:30, costs £22.50. To book, just go to the Cambridge Wine Academy website. And that's all the time we have for today's flavour.
We're on alternative Saturdays at 1pm from the 1st of September, repeated on Sunday at 2pm, and then podcast early in the week.
And you can contact us with any news or comment when we're off the air. Just email flavour@cambridge105.co.uk, or you can contact us on Twitter at flavour105.
Next up at 3pm, it's 2 hours of Classical Cambridge, presented by Mark Liversidge, featuring many local interviews and performances. At 5pm, Polish Waves returns. The programme presented half in English and half in Polish. The Polish Waves team brings you some carefully curated news, entertainment and music. From the Terraces is on at 6pm, presented by Tim Armitage and the crew, and they'll be reviewing the latest footballing action from Cambridge United, Cambridge City and Histon Town. At 7pm, the always excellent Chris Stewarden is back on the air with Sweet Revenge. With his co-host Becky Conway, they'll be bringing you the latest from the indie pop scene, with favourites like Spook School and Trust Fund, along with an army of well-loved classics including The Fall, Belle and Sebastian, The Smiths, and, well, you know, plenty more. Jackie Bond is here at 8 with Let the Good Times Roll, featuring the best in rock and roll over the last, 68 years. And Rebel Arts Radio is at 9, with music, politics, art, discussion and debate presented by Pete Monahan, Mark Evans and Johnny Cabbage. Stagger is then with us at 10 o'clock, that's rap, electronica and experimental music, with Tom Taylor, David Cunnington and Ian Shaw. And then, rounding off the evening, it's Bookmark with Lee Chambers, the fortnightly show that talks about books and writing with a local slant. So there you go, a packed bill of local radio presented by us, and we are all volunteers here on Cambridge 105 Radio, here with you each day.
But we'll be back on the 1st of September at 1pm, not 12, but 1. Until then,
goodbye.
Goodbye.